This is JS Party, your weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. Changelog Beats is now a thing. Check out our first two albums, Theme Songs, which includes this Sonic-themed JS Party remix, and Next Level, which is all video game-inspired tracks for your next coding or deep work adventure. Find Changelog Beats in Spotify, Apple Music, and the rest. Quick thank you to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. Okay, hey, it's party time, y'all.
Well, friends, I'm here with Eldad Fuchs, founder and CEO of AppRite. Build fast, scale big, all in one place. Eldad, what's the backstory on your platform?
The main thing is basically I started AppRite for myself. It started as a side project about 3 years ago when I was trying to solve my own challenges as an engineer. I'm coming with a background. I've been writing code for something like 20 years. And I've been building a lot of solo projects and I've been leading teams as a team lead, as a CTO. And I always felt like things are way more complex than what they should be. At some point, I also discovered that my true passion is not really just writing code. It's actually seeing stuff coming to life. And code was just a mean to an end. And the end was to build product. And AppRite's goal was to basically try and abstract all of this complexity, all of this knowledge that you needed to possess as a developer about security, building different APIs. You know, for me, it took, in one of my previous companies, it took us like 6 months to build an authentication API for a massive platform with over 1 million users. And that's something that, you know, honestly, I don't ever want to do again. Not just because it was so complex, like who wants to build the same thing twice? So AppRite was this like platform that I imagined that like I can just build it once and let everyone build on top of it and build my own side projects on top of it, build my own startup on top of it, which actually my previous startup was built completely on top of AppRite. Yeah, and today we have major services, major products that are just all inside the same platform. Like if you need authentication, AppRite has it. If you need storage management, like manage your files and manage your image transformation, AppRite has you covered. If you need a database to like store and make sure that you can handle all the persistency needs of your app, you got it. You need serverless functions, you got it. And we're planning a lot of more surprises down the road and add a lot more capabilities to this. What we envision is like the cloud that was designed, that is designed for developers.
Okay, the cloud that was built for developers, AppRite.io. Check them out. Build fast, scale big, all in one place. AppRite is a back-end platform for developing web, mobile, and Flutter applications. Get started at AppRite.io. Again, AppRite.io. And tell them JS Party sent you.
Hello, JS Party listeners. It's me, your host, Amal Hussein, and really excited for today's show. So as always, this is JS Party, a weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. And with me on the show today is K-Ball. Hello, K-Ball.
Hello, hello.
And our very special guest, Valerie Phoenix. Hello, welcome, Valerie.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. And so today we're going to be talking about pretty like big and heavy and important topic, which is really kind of, you know, how do we get folks from underrepresented backgrounds, especially to kind of enter tech, stay in tech, and thrive in tech. And so we've invited Valerie Phoenix here to join us for this discussion because she's an engineering manager who also, I think, like, you know, in all of her free time started an organization, right? And I say that sarcastically, right? Called Tech by Choice. And Tech by Choice is a nonprofit that kind of really aims to foster and facilitate getting folks, you know, that are underrepresented minorities into tech. And, you know, they host workshops and events and all kinds of things and, you know, share resources. And we're going to learn all about that today. So before we get started, Valerie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you for that intro. So again, my name is Valerie Phoenix. I'm an engineering manager. I started in tech about 9-10 years ago and self-taught developer. Didn't know much about JavaScript. I kind of still remember a meetup where I'm like, yeah, I know Java, and started showing lines of JavaScript. And people were just like, ooh, I don't think you know Java. So that was my first introduction into tech. And over the last couple of years, I transitioned into engineering management and just have been having a really good time navigating the space and figuring out what I really care about and how I can bring different parts of my skill set coming from a non-technical background, bringing in psychology and art into everything I do to create these very human-centered, secure, and accessible environments or products. It's just a really great experience. But I've only been having a good time because I found really great community to support me along the way. And so that's a little bit about my journey into tech.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm not surprised to hear that you have such a, like, I would say, diverse is the wrong word, but it's like a, I would say, a non-technical background.
Non-traditional background.
Non-traditional. There we go. Thank you. That's the word. Non-traditional background. I feel like all good ideas in tech come from people that didn't start in tech, I feel like. So thank you, Valerie. But like, I would say, how was your own journey influenced by the eventual creation of Tech by Choice? Like, what kind of led you to that?
Yeah, so I've always been really big on doing community work, even through like being really young and like high school and middle school and things like that. I kind of didn't do that much in college. And when I started making the transition to realize tech is where I was going to go, I wasn't going to go to grad school. I realized I was missing that. I missed that sense of community, of the shared goal of to make things better. And I started to go into more identity-focused tech groups, like women in tech groups, and that's where I found my sweet spot. But there is still something really lacking. I felt like I was still really struggling to break in, despite these groups talking about diversity, about inclusion, about really being a space that I could learn and not struggle and feel accepted in. It was to the point that I sometimes would say like, oh, I just won't pay my phone bill this month because I want to take this JavaScript class and I can't afford, and there was no more scholarships available for me to take the class on my own. So I was constantly making decisions like that. Or if I wanted to go to a meetup group just to understand and to network, I had to make the choice of, am I going to pay for parking or am I going to pay for gas? And just hope I don't run out on the way there or on the way back. And a lot of the times I opted to pay for gas and hope I didn't get a parking ticket that I probably wouldn't have been able to pay for. And For my first year and a half, I kept having to make those choices and they kept getting bigger and the consequences kept expanding. It got to the point where I got a really good apprenticeship program and I got accepted into it, but the pay, I think, was $12 an hour and I was working 20 hours. So I had to cut my full-time job in half and I took out this really bad loan that had super high interest rates. And that was my first step into tech. And that was the way that I was doing it. And I still was relying on those communities to provide that extra cushion. There was some support. I did get some scholarships here and there. But that was still my experience with the support. And so after going through that and after getting my stability in the industry, I realized that we could do more. And I kept pushing for those organizations to do more. And they were just not, I don't know if they didn't really understand my experience or if they didn't understand that this was common for a lot of people. And that's why people didn't make that jump to make the transition into tech, even if they were interested. And so that's where the idea of Tech by Choice came from. I had to make a lot of choices that didn't benefit me, but in the long run, it made a huge difference in what opportunities I had. And so that's where the organization came from and why I'm still so passionate about it now.
So I feel like there's like, you had so many different things pushing against you there. And some of them I have heard a lot about before, and some of them I actually maybe haven't heard as much before. And it might be worth like breaking them down a little bit, because I think there's a challenge anyone faces coming into the tech industry of like, how do you find your first position? Even if you have a traditional, I went to a computer, got a computer science degree, whatever, like that first position is really hard to find. That entry is even more challenging if you are in a marginalized group, whether you are a woman, you're Black, both, like the intersectionality comes in, like there's a whole piece there. And I think there's stuff to sort of expand about the uniqueness of that experience and what makes that challenging and how we bridge it. And then you had a whole third area here, which is, what if I'm coming from a background where I'm scraping to make ends meet? I don't have the money to take an unpaid internship. I'm making these like tough financial choices just to be able to educate myself and try to learn these things. And that's like a whole nother class of challenges. And you managed to like overcome all three of these. And I think that's amazing. I'm kind of curious, like, does Tech by Choice trying to attack all of these problems? Is it trying to attack like particular ones of these problems? Like what sets of support are y'all offering?
So I think to break down what Tech by Choice supports is to talk about our three pillars. And I say it all the time, and it's interstate and thrive. So for our interpillar, we are really focusing about making sure that people can bridge that gap of understanding a little bit about maybe Silicon Valley, about these tech startups, but finding ways to explain it so that they can see themselves in these roles. And a big thing that we have always talked about is that tech is so much more than coding. I think I always joke and tell people, imagine if all the developers came together and we were the only people running the whole entire industry. I'm like, it would be problems. There would be problems. Things probably wouldn't get shipped.
We would fail on day zero, I think.
Yes.
because we'd be arguing about whether SQL statements should be in. So I'm just kidding. Yeah. fine. It would be a disaster.
No, we'd all just be rewriting our blocks, right?
Yes. Lots of refactoring and conversations if TypeScript is important. That would be a big thing. But I used those things as examples to show people that you could take the skills that you have to enter in this industry and still do well. And so that is how we address the enter. And we also do things that are like either completely free for our members or extremely subsidized. Our ticket prices are anywhere from like $5 to $10, and we've never gone beyond that. And so that is how we focus on our enter. When we talk about the stay, and this is the part that I think sets us apart the most, we are really focused on creating content that will go beyond like, oh, learn these skills, get that first job. We actually create content that helps you get that promotion, that helps you level up. And so we are always looking to partner with companies to have them come and do like demos of how do you use your product, or reaching out to dev advocates to come and talk about how do you use this framework, like Angular and things like that. And so we do these deep dives to talk about the deeper, more technical topics. We have product folk from Netflix come through and say, like, this is how you think about building products. This is how you work in Sketch. This is how you work in Figma. So we do more to than just how to learn the basics, but instead we talk about how to go deeper with those skill sets. But we also talk about more so how to thrive, because I think that's also a big part that I was missing in my journey. So when we talk about how to thrive in tech, we're addressing a lot of the things that you pointed out that I struggled with, scraping by, living paycheck to paycheck. Just because I entered in tech, I didn't have that financial literacy coming from my family. And so we talk about things like financial literacy. We talk about mental health because, again, being that intersect of woman and Black, it's hard to navigate this space. And so we have conversations around that. And then, of course, workplace discrimination, because unfortunately, we are in a space that I think is better, but it's not perfect. So we need to have that space to talk about what do you do when things go wrong. And so that is how we try to attack and support those different things that people will go through.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant, Valerie. And, you know, I think it wasn't until actually just listening to you right now that I realized like how much of your story is my story as well. You know, like I've been financially independent since I was like 17 and had to really kind of pull myself up by my bootstraps in many, many ways in my own life. And I am, you know, woman identified, you know, I'm a Black person, right? And just kind of the sheer number of obstacles that you have to overcome in this industry, not just from the like from the financial aspect, right? Like, because there's this interesting thing that happens where you are kind of moving across social classes, you know, as you kind of enter this industry. and all of a sudden you're making real money. And then there's like you mentioned, like even just the financial literacy, right, aspect of it, and you know, how to save well, how to invest well, you know, get out of debt, whatever it is, right? All those things like are really important all of a sudden, and you've never had to think about those problems before. But then just even the like going back to your point earlier, the amount of kind of assumed privilege there is for like technologists, right? Like just, you know, like the entry cost of this is not cheap, right? Like it's like a soccer versus skiing kind of, or soccer versus hockey analogy, right? Like you need a $3,000 laptop, you need this, you need that, and you need all this time to be able to, you know, to learn. And like, that's just a lot of assumptions that are baked into that, right? And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a self-select group of people that manage to kind of pass through all of these hoops, you know, and kind of still come out of the other side, like kind of sane, you know what I mean? So
I think there's something interesting in that to explore. So you mentioned the moving between classes, and I think this is something that a lot of people in the industry don't think about, because that there are so many people coming from that sort of upper middle class, you know, traditional background, even if they have a non-traditional path into tech. And engineers tend to be a little bit, we're not always the best at like understanding what other people are going through and seeing those. And we like kind of, I think, have this idea that tech is a very meritocratic environment, and that we don't see class and we don't see these different things. And so I think it might actually be worth kind of exploring some of the ways those assumptions get broken when you're coming from a very different background, so that kind of making it visible for those folks, of which I include myself, who weren't kind of coming from a place where I was not self-supporting from the age of 17. I feel very blessed and privileged to have not had that kind of situation, but there's probably a set of things that you had to overcome, that you each had to overcome, that were invisible to me because I wasn't coming from that background.
Yeah. You're also like a white dude in tech, right? And like no hate at all to my white brothers, like in the sense that, like, you know, for me personally, speaking as a black woman, I think I also just want to make the statement that white men have helped me in my career more than anyone, you know, just to be clear, right? So we're going to use the word probably like white guy a lot throughout this podcast, but it's, you know, not...
I will
not
be your representative
not,
white
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, not necessarily in a derogatory way for what it's worth. But I don't know. You should go first, Valerie, because I have a lot to say on this.
Yeah. Do you mind rephrasing the question one more time?
Yes. So kind of what I'm trying to get at is, and we can use me as a white guy as representative of this, though I think it actually, the barrier that I'm looking at is more the economic one. So I know people who have a variety of racial and gender backgrounds who are coming from kind of upper middle class. But I think if you are raised in an environment where you're never having to make those decisions around, do I pay for parking or gas, or those types of things, like the types of things that you described in terms of the financial literacy you have to learn, thinking about money in a different way, thinking about class in a different way, like those are just invisible. You never had to deal with it. So what, I don't even know what that means. So I'm kind of like wondering, you know, as you talk about, oh, we have to educate on financial literacy. What is it that you get into your first tech job and you're like, oh, this is different. This is holding me back that I didn't have this, or this is something I need to learn. Like, I'm just trying to make that, like the premise here is there's a whole set of people, yourselves included, who have to overcome these obstacles that the sort of majority of folks in tech didn't know about. How do we make those visible?
Yeah, I think a better way for me to say this is, for people who haven't had this experience and for people who don't have, or anyone in their circle who has gone through this, I don't know if there is a way for you to learn about this outside of like doing extra reading or just like being in communities with people who are maybe not your normal network, and just talking and not really going to network or try to network up or anything like that, but just being community with people. And then you start to see like, okay, so people have to think about childcare. I think that's a really more tangible topic for people to understand, to make that jump to say like, oh, how can I think more broadly about different experiences? Because we do have coworkers who may be single and do not have children. Or we have coworkers who are married with children or single with children, And so you can see the different things that those folks have to do in order to show up at work. And so it's a little bit easier for us to start to have that mental model of, am I thinking and building something that is going to help those folks make sure that they can think about childcare, about having enough space and time to do different things. And so when you start to think about it and you expand that mental model to something that maybe be super unfamiliar for you. So like in this topic, like financial literacy, think about everything that you have to make a payment for and expect that person or anyone in your group or anyone at the company, expect at least 1 to 2 people to not have a credit card. Or if you want to even get into a better mental model, expect 1 person on your team to not have a bank account. Because if I'm being honest, like where I grew up, that's very common. Like a lot of the friends that I still talk to from high school and things like that, they just recently got their first credit card. And so that is just a different restrictions for how you can navigate something as simple as a company offsite. I think the first time I had a company offsite where they flew us out, I did not know how to do anything. I think I had only been on a plane 1 time before that, and I didn't buy my ticket. And so all of that was so new to me. I didn't know what to do. And on top of me supporting myself, I'm also my mom's 401k. So even that those first few jobs in tech, it still didn't feel like I was making a tech salary because so much of my money goes back to my family to help support and make ends meet. So I think having that mindset of possibly someone not having a credit card and not having a bank account would have helped my first experience in my first offsite because I was expected to pay for all this stuff and then get reimbursed. So that meant even though I have this nice tech salary, I had to juggle a couple of bills and figure things out in order to wait for that reimbursement. I think, again, just using what you have as context for your first mental model and then starting to expand that and just expect and use the framework of what is the most marginalized experience someone can have or what is the experience where people have almost nothing and how would that person be able to feel equal to other people around them? And that's how I would go about it.
No, that's like such great insight and such a good reminder. Like I hear about those stories, you know, every once in a while where, you know, someone is being flown out for like the last stage of an interview or an offsite or something, you know, and they're kind of asked to kind of front up a lot of money, right? And they'll get reimbursed, but that's assuming that someone has the money to spend, has the time to wait for that money to come back to them. Lots of assumptions are baked into that, you know? And, you know, being in an industry where most people are upper middle class, you know, we just kind of, there's a lot of assumptions baked into kind of the way we operate our businesses, our HR, whatever it is. Like there's just a lot of those assumptions. And so thank you for kind of shedding insights into some of those. You know, I guess full transparency, for me personally, I've definitely struggled with some of those issues in the past. And my parents, you know, I grew up upper middle class. And then my dad, like when I was 15, his business tanked when the market crashed and it just never came back. And so all of a sudden I was like starting college with like no money. I literally started college. I know people say this all the time. But I literally started college with $6 in my bank account, which I've only started to publicly like talk about with friends and family, like as I like kind of unpacking my own trauma, you know, but, you know, what it was like to kind of be around people who, you know, were getting money from their grandparents to go to college and all this stuff, you know, it was just like, I don't know, it was so different than my own personal experience. And then to kind of to your 401k thing, thank you for giving me an analogy for that, because I also am my mom's 401k, you know, I financially support my family and, you know, and it's such a, like the burden on me versus someone who's actually getting help from their family, like it's just night and day, you know? And so even though I'm like a high earner, upper middle class now, you know, I'm still not as quote unquote wealthy as my friends who don't have that burden on them, you know? And then, you know, to go back to the, like the friction thing, right? To go to your enter and stay and thrive kind of principles, you know, when you're a person of color or you're an other in this industry, there's just a whole other like tax on you. And then, you know, then there's like the class aspect is just kind of like another layer on top of that, right? But for example, like something I kind of always give to my friends as an analogy is, hey, think about how hard it is to just be in this industry. And now imagine if you were a woman, and now imagine if you were also like a person of color, imagine if you were also like LGBTQ plus, imagine if you had a physical disability, all these things, you know? So it's just like, they all kind of like compound, and it kind of creates that leaky pipeline problem in our community where, you know, we might have people entering, but they just kind of never stay too long. And I'm just curious, Valerie, like how are you all kind of helping tackle that specific issue where there's just like a leaky pipeline where people are just like, you know what, F this, I'm out, you know?
This may not be the answer you would have thought, but we support that. Like, we support people leaving the workplace because sometimes it's just not for us. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people started to think like, oh, I have these skills. I'm able to build these things for these companies. Why am I not investing in myself and starting to build products? And why am I not like working with my community to find different ways to be a consultant, to have more freedom, to be able to be in more control of what my income looks like, despite whatever is happening in the world? And so while we talk about, yes, we want you to land a tech job, I think a part of us, our mission and how we support the communities shifted during the pandemic. And we're like, you know what? We just want people to feel empowered to use tech in whatever way that they feel suits them. So if that means you're learning about tech to get a 9-to-5, great. We'll have resources to support you with that. But we also help people figure out if a business is something that they want to start. So we partner with other nonprofits that are focused on helping founders and small businesses. And we do partner content, and we've done things like that to help people figure out, how do you build something that people will actually pay for? And what does that process look like? And we came up with this 30-day challenge that helped people find a MVP of an idea. And just with that idea, without building anything, they try to find different ways to validate it so that they know they're going in the right direction versus spinning in circles. So while it may not be fitting for everyone to work in the industry, I still think it's important for people to learn those skills and be able to navigate that. And then for people who feel like they're struggling and they feel like they're stuck in the industry and they still want to have a 9-to-5, we have a lot of programs and support around, again, building your skill set to help you build the skills you need to do well in your role and help you level up. And then when it comes time to trying to find a new job, we even have programs around that. We have a new program called Talent Choice. And so it's a community-driven recruiting service. So that way, your friends are hyping you up and giving you support and walking through the interview process. And we call those folks our community-based recruiters. And they are with you and they partner with you. They'll go back and forth and help you negotiate your salary. And once you land and get that offer letter, you're able to get a good salary. Your recruiter also gets their commission, so they get paid out from the company. And so we have this network and this community that is able to support each other, find a company that suits them, and they're able to do it in a way that money is flowing through our community, so people are really engaged with finding their friends good jobs, which takes out that weirdness of having those LinkedIn recruiters hit you up and just throw anything at you. So there's a lot of different ways we try to support people for whatever path that they want to go down.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you said there that I love. So one, I don't think we talk about enough how many different possible career paths there are with technical skills. If you can do software development, you can be an entrepreneur, you can be a freelancer, which gives you all sorts of different, if you have time constraints because you're caregiving or other things like that, freelancing can be wonderful for that. You can, you know, be in-house at a tech company. You can be in a tech department of a non-tech company. Technical skills will help you if you are in like a product management role or something like that. Like, there are so many different ways in which these skills have become useful in our world. And I think from the outside, sometimes you say, oh, if I want to do software, I got to go and get an engineering job at Google. well, there's not that many people who get an engineering job at Google. And if you set that as the bar for yourself, you're going to probably be disappointed and miss out on a lot of other really powerful opportunities.
Oh yeah, 100%. And Valerie, I loved what, first of all, amazing answer, like points for you in the sense that I love that you're kind of encouraging folks to think outside the box in terms of, you know, how they can be in tech, right? Most of us think like K-Ball was saying, you know, tech is kind of limited to FANG, you know, that doesn't even include Microsoft, you know, it's funny. So just the sheer number of like people that kind of miss out on incredible opportunities in lots of other industries, including starting their own business, like you said, and serving their communities. It's just astronomical. Everyone's kind of fighting for the same jobs when there's so many underserved industries like, you know, education, government, you name it, like all kinds of every single industry needs technology, like needs software engineers, right? And so how do we now kind of spread the wealth and, you know, uplift all these other industries that could use the talent? And so I find that's one of the other ways, especially for junior folks trying to break in. I always kind of tell them, hey, like consider other industries, you know, hey, Home Depot needs software engineers, right? Like your local hospital needs software engineers, right? And so it's just really great to hear that you're encouraging folks to kind of think outside the box.
This is a Changelog news break. The hubbub of the web dev world right now is Next.js's integration of React server components, specifically the use server directive, which lets you write React components that run SQL queries and presumably other server-side things. People's gut reaction to this has been all over the map. Maybe it sounds super powerful and expressive to you. Maybe it sounds super dangerous and sloppy. Me? It reminds me a lot of the index.php files we wrote at the turn of the century, which isn't something I want in my life anymore, but I'm withholding judgment until I see more. In the wake of this divisive news came criticism and acclaim for Next.js itself, even though it is the React team enabling and promoting the behavior, which leads us to our next headlines. You just heard one of our five top stories from Monday's Changelog News. Subscribe to the podcast to get all of the week's top stories and pop your email address in at changelog.com/news to also receive our free companion email with even more developer news worth your attention. Once again, that's changelog.com/news.
And so once they kind of get their first job, you know, going into your stay pillar, what do you see as common themes for, you know, success or kind of common pitfalls that people hit?
So I think one of the big things that everyone tends to run into is just like, what do you do? I think people tend to hyper-focus on like, let me build these skills. Let me learn how to do this as an independent individual on a solo project. There's this disconnect between what it's like to work and the actual workplace. So that is something we see often. And then once they get over that hurdle, it's just like, oh, reviews are here. How do I talk about my work? How do I advocate for myself? Which I think is huge, especially for folks from marginalized backgrounds. We do not know how to talk about ourselves in a way that really speaks to our accomplishments. And so I think one of the things that we've started doing is we have a weekly career prompt because we tell people, we tell our community, like, you have to take control of your own career. Like, these things just don't happen. And so we help people understand how to create a brag sheet, how to tie that to workplace KPIs. How do you then talk to your manager about the work that you've done? And these weekly prompts just help you navigate and help you figure out what it is you are good at, what do you like to do, how do you talk about it, who do you work with, and it just helps you create this track record of what you've been doing in the workplace to help you get to that promotion. Because that's the next big thing and the bigger reason why I see a lot of folks in our community start to leave tech is because it's like they hit this glass ceiling. I see a lot of people move up. And it's a lot easier to move up and you're like going from junior to mid-level. But sometimes people stall out with senior. They find that there's these different hurdles that they have to jump to get that senior title. And there's really no clear reason why. And because our industry is set up that senior at one place, it means something completely different at senior at another company. It's this huge gray area that just allows all of the negative self-talk, the doubt, all of that starts to seep in and people start to question if they're good enough. And so we also have stuff to, like, just, again, talking about mental health and things like that to help people navigate and move through those different spaces.
Yeah, I mean, that's really fantastic. And everything you shared, I feel like, is just generally, like, I mean, this is great for, like, anyone, but I would say especially folks that are marginalized, like you said, right? Because, you know, those are the folks that really need to kind of, like, take that advocacy, like, to the next level, right? Where they're advocating for themselves. And so, like, that's really fantastic. And those are all resources available for free, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, all for free.
So that gap from whether it's mid-level to senior, or sometimes it's at senior to staff, that is a place where engineers across the board tend to get stuck, because the types of things, the type of work changes and the type of skills you need change. And it's not, well, there's nobody teaching it necessarily. So you need to have a mentor or a manager who's guiding you through that. But to kind of your point, if you are disadvantaged, one of the ways that that shows up is you are often less likely to have a direct mentor at work. Your manager is less likely to give you that hands-on guidance or help you get through that transition that is hard for everyone, requires a mentor for everyone. But if you have fewer role models and fewer, you know, less access to those sort of mentorship folks, you're much more likely to get stuck. And to your point, like, getting stuck feels bad. If you already have self-doubts, if you already have people saying, you know, talking down to you in one way or another for whatever reason, like, that's going to compound.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to touch upon, that, like, that growth area, sometimes you are just, like, offered different, like, stretch projects and things like that. And depending on the company, especially if it's a startup, or maybe it's just a really large company, there's not a lot of those. So people have to go outside of the workplace to try to get that experience. And if I'm being honest, that's how I moved into management so quickly. Starting a nonprofit, it's funny enough, makes you a really good manager, you know? But not everyone's going to start a nonprofit, nor do I think everyone needs to start a nonprofit to be a manager. And so another thing that we started to implement in our programming is giving our senior folks and our folks trying to get those stretch projects opportunities, but through our open source project, as well as our mentorship program, to be able to build that leadership and be able to talk about architecture in a very different way than they may have been able to in the workplace, because they don't have access to those projects. And so a big part of our open source project is that we do it in a cohort. It's usually a small cohort. We'll build a small project, but we'll pair folks up with mentors from the industry. And these are people who, again, are looking for those stretch projects to get that experience that they can take back to the workplace. So even though our programs are targeted sometimes more toward entry-level or mid-level folks, there's always this other component that we build in so that people who are looking to grow from senior and higher can still build those skill sets, and they can come to us as a place to fill in those gaps and figure out what the next steps are. And we also have mentors for them. So I think it's just a really great way to be in community and support each other throughout whatever stage of the tech journey you're on.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a phenomenal thing that I feel like every engineer needs in their life, really. But especially the folks in your community. And so can you tell us a little bit more about the specifics of this open source project that you all lead up?
Yeah, so this is one of the, honestly, first programs we launched for Tech by Choice. Funny enough, our very first open source project was a design project, which is not very typical for open source. And so what we do is we get a cohort of a small team, like 8 to 10 people, and you'll have developers, designers, a PM. And depending on what the project is, you'll see a dedicated accessibility person or different roles pop in and out, like security. And we will just build out like a mini project together over a span of like 3 to 6 months. And throughout that program, folks, by the end of the program, folks get a stipend for their work. and completing it. And they also get paired with mentors along the way. So you get to have check-ins. You have someone who's doing a code review with you. And because it's scheduled check-ins, you can hop on a Zoom with them and have them review your code and explain things in real time, which we found to be the biggest benefit. Same with design feedback. Having that Zoom session makes such a big difference in people's ability to grow. And throughout that project, we try to have as much fun as possible, but it's also really exciting to like get to the end of it and have people put in their portfolio. And we're now able to be references for people for work because they got the experience of working on a team. And we can say like, yes, they're really great at that. And this is what they need coaching on. And this is how you can support them once they start that first day of work.
I'm going to start crying.
I mean, I have a coaching client right now who is a career switcher. So they're not in the financially disadvantaged state because they're coming from a different career. So they were able to pay for coaching, for example. But we have essentially been manufacturing what you're talking about here. He's been going out to meetups, finding people to work on projects together, basically trying, you know, what you're trying to do getting in is build a track record, build some sort of demonstration that, yes, I can do this work, because that first job is the hardest job you're ever going to get because you don't have any sort of track record. And, you know, it's a tremendous amount of effort and work doing that. And like, you know, he's been paying for a coach to help him through this process. And he's been doing all of this on not, you know, he's able to take a bunch of time and dedicate to this and figure it out because he has the money from a previous career, which is great, right? Like, that's good. But if you have all of these different sort of barriers that we've been talking about in place, how do you do that? Well, it sounds like how you do that is tech by choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think you just got your little ad, you know, you just like bottle that up, put that on the website. That's like your like 10-second pitch, you know? Yeah, Valerie, I like, honestly, there's just so much to that project. Like, there's so many layers that you tackle, right? Like experience, collaboration, open source, contributions, getting like that, like one-on-one mentorship time that, you know, most people get in their first, you know, 2 to 3 years of working in a job, you know, and you know, like for every hour you pair with like someone that's a junior engineer, like that's like, it's such a world of difference to them. Like, you know, I just really like, it's just kind of like a game changing thing because they're just absorbing and learning and growing at such a fast rate that like anything you throw at them is just, you know, it's going to be insightful. It's going to move the needle for them. And I remember like my first job, my first professional job as a software engineer, getting that mentorship experience and getting it, you know, being able to sit one-on-one with senior engineers, like it really helped me level up like it drastically. And so I'm sure you see that all kinds of serious leveling up for folks, like by the time they're done with that project, like, can you share some success stories from that?
Yeah, I think my favorite one is actually our very first project. And again, our very first open source project was a design project. I still don't know how or why we thought like that was like the coolest thing to do, but it was and it worked. But I taught a UX bootcamp a couple of years ago. I think it was like right when I was starting the nonprofit. And I had one student that a couple of my students from that course ended up joining the nonprofit. And one of them ended up joining that open source initiative. And I think it was the perfect example of when you would want to join a program like that and what the outcome could look like. So she was able to go through that program right after the boot camp and working with a few different folks from the industry, getting feedback like rapidly. And we were building and prototyping. And actually, if you look at the Tech by Choice website, all of our branding, that came from the open source project. I get so many compliments on that. They always want to know what agency we worked with and things like that. And I tell them it's our community. And so we were able to put that into her portfolio. And she was able, I think it was just a few months after we wrapped up that project, she landed her first job in the industry doing product design work. And it was, I think, the best example of how just having that dedicated, hands-on working experience in a team can make a really big change and help you land that job and continue to grow. And she's still in the community now. I just had a Zoom with her the other day. We're helping her look for her next role. So great story, great example, great person, just favorite experience from that program.
That's incredible. And so how can people help? Because I'm sure people are listening to this like, wow, sounds like Valerie and her team are doing really great work at Tech by Choice. Website's techbychoice.org, by the way, website that was built by folks in her community. And so can you share some insights on, you know, how folks can get involved and help you in your mission as allies?
Yeah, I think our biggest need is always going to be funding. So any resources or connections to sponsorships, if there's any companies who are listening and want to get involved, we're a really great community to work with, especially if you want people to be your spokesperson in these companies to use your product or your framework. Would love to do any partnerships that way. We're always looking for mentors. We really need folks who are experienced, especially with the downturn within our industry right now, with hiring just not being that great. We need folks who are currently working in the space just to be there and be mentors for folks to let them know that things will get better. They're going to get better. And that they have a support system to get through all of this. So if you're open to being a mentor for a community, definitely check out our website. We are looking for volunteers as well. Running all of these programs is pretty hard on our small team. So we have a number of volunteer openings on our site that you can take a look at. And donations. Donations are always great and they help. Right now, if you donate $25, that will cover two people to come to one of our free events. So you can see how small donations, huge impacts. So those are a few of the ways to help. If anyone has any ideas, feel free to reach out through the website.
Yeah, I think, not to jump on this, but something you said there, I think is really important to reemphasize, which is that the industry right now is tough to break into. I know people with over a decade of experience who are looking for new jobs, and they say it's the hardest they've ever seen it in their recent experience. So if you are, and anytime I'll say to people who are new, saying the first job you get is the hardest you'll ever get. Don't give up, right? It's the hardest to find that first one. That's biggest barrier. And once you get that first one, things get a lot easier. That's still true, but now that barrier has gotten even higher because the tech industry is in the doldrums. That won't be true forever. It really won't. And to the point that you both have made, the tech industry is one where the money can be life-changing. You know, it's one of the few places currently in the economy where you don't need a particular degree to come in and end up making six figures. And if your family has struggled, if you're coming from a place where that's a lot of money, like that can be so life-changing for you and the people around you. So like, yeah, it's really hard right now. It's really hard for everyone. But if you persevere and get through it, like it will get better. You keep showing up and doing the work and eventually you will get that opportunity and it can change your life.
We need the people who are building the products to represent the people who are using the products, right? And so we need all kinds of people writing software, right? Because all kinds of people are using software. And so until we close that gap, there's always going to be injustice in the software, right? There's going to be bias and all kinds of things. And so we need you. We need more people that are different in all capacities, right? You know, not just race, all capacities. And so, you know, so I really thank you, Valerie, for taking this work on. And honestly, like, I'm very emotional right now. I really am. Because it's just like, you're someone who came into this through struggle. You entered, you stayed, you thrived. And now you're, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And now you're helping. Now you're helping others.
And the reason why you're so emotional is why I do the work. Because the change that I've seen just within my own life, I remember the first time I got a good paying job. I was highly underpaid for a very long time. I almost crashed my car because I answered the phone while I was driving. And when she told me my salary, I couldn't believe it. Didn't think it would ever be possible. And I think that week my mom had just went into the hospital and I didn't know how I was going to make anything work because that meant she wouldn't be able to work anymore. And I didn't know what to do. And that's the type of life-changing things that can happen by getting a salary that can relieve stress from you, but also your family. And I try not to think about it this often. I know that means that I've changed the direction for my own life because I was going to be an artist. So like so much different, way different than tech, right? I changed the direction on the side, but changed the direction of my life, and I've changed the direction of my family's life, even my mom, even at her age. So anyone I can help have the same experience. I had my own barriers, but got through it. So I want to see as many people come along and do the same thing and have the same emotions that we both have.
Like amen to that. And just thank you for everything that you do, really. I think the conversation of money in particular is one that we don't really have often enough in this industry. It is such a barrier. It's such a burden. It's so many things, you know, and we just don't talk about it. And so thank you for shedding light on this issue. Thank you for everything that you're doing. For folks who are listening, please donate money, donate time, donate expertise. You know, there's lots of ways for you to become an ally and make a difference in people's lives. So you can help support the next Valerie, you know? And so I guess to kind of close this out, Valerie, like, can you share some insights for like how you've grown and what you've learned and, you know, what's kind of next for you as a leader, as an engineer, as so many things?
I think one of the biggest things I've learned is that I don't have to do it all, and that this mission that I'm very passionate about doesn't require just me to make it come through, make it something that is real, and that it takes a whole community. And I think I had a very difficult year this year, and I thought that meant that the nonprofit would have to possibly close because I didn't know how I would balance all the things. And as soon as I shared with the community what was going on, they instantly showed up and they said like, oh, you've done all this work. We're here to support you. We need this. We want this. And so tell us what to do. And I think that's a testament to, it's not just me. I'm not the important person in this whole entire organization. It is the community. And we always say, forget test-driven development because that is complicated sometimes. And I hate when my code doesn't pass a test. Our community is 100% community-driven development. And to me, that's what I've learned to be the most important. It's the thing that has kept me going with the nonprofit, that has made me passionate, continue to be passionate about it. But it's also the thing that has made me not leave this industry. I haven't always found the best workplaces. I worked at very toxic places, but being in community and knowing that we can also step up and support each other makes the biggest difference.
So well said. And yeah, it's surprisingly difficult to find places that are not toxic in tech. You know, it feels like, especially like the more people know about the company, it seems like the more toxic it is, you know, surprisingly. But yeah, so well said. Thank you so much. Yeah. And Cable, anything else we want to kind of add or close out or any questions before we kind of wrap up?
I mean, I think the overwhelming lesson or thing message coming through to me here is the importance of putting your hand down. You know, as you climb up a ladder, whatever that ladder may be, wherever along it you are, whether you have just broken into the tech industry from a disadvantaged background, or you've been in the industry for 20 years and climbed up to some high level, like, put your hand down to help somebody else climb up that ladder, because it is life-changing for them. And I mean, to your point about like doing the work, one of the reasons I got into coaching, right? The thing that is most meaningful about the technology work we do, the work in tech, is the people we impact. The code that I wrote 10 years ago is not still in production. I've been working in this industry for close to 20 years, and pretty much everything that I wrote has been transient in one form or another. Some of it has lasted longer than others, but it's pretty much all transient. That is the nature of the work. What is not transient is the people you meet along the way, your ability to help them change their lives, and the relationships that you build out of that. And so I think, you know, looking at this, you know, Valerie, you're doing incredible work on this. And I think you have the background to bring a perspective that most people in tech don't have.
An important perspective too.
And an important perspective. And we should listen to that. But I think the message also coming out of this is no matter where you are in tech, there is someone who wishes they could get to where you are. And if you can lend down some advice, mentorship, sponsorship, a hand, buy that plane ticket, or, you know, tell your HR, hey, when we're interviewing folks, we need to actually either interview them remotely or pay, no, do some sort of advocacy to help them get that hand up to that first opportunity. Like that's what I think we're asking for here. And that's one way to make a huge difference in a lot of people's lives.
So well said. And so Valerie, again, I've never cried on this podcast. And I've done so many shows, never cried on a podcast. And that's just because I'm so, like, I see myself in your story. I understand how much effort goes into doing something like this and how much leadership I think you bring to this project and just what kind of impact this is having on people's lives. And so, so really just thank you. Again, please donate your time, your money, your expertise, techbychoice.org. And so Valerie, if folks want to connect with you, where can they find you on the internet?
I believe I'm on all social media platforms, and my handle is digitalblkhippy. It's fun, it's cute, it's something I had way too young and never let it go.
It's a great handle. All right, well, I guess that's our show for this week, everyone. Thank you so much again, Valerie. And hope everyone has a lovely rest of their day.
Next up on the pod, it's our 300th episode extravaganza, including a brand new musical duet featuring Amel and the Ghost of Horse JS.
You did not just say that.
Oh, yes, I did. I don't want to spoil anything, but here's a very brief preview.
His beloved TypeScript.
If that sounds good to you, for at least some definition of the word good, subscribe to the pod at jsparty.fm. And while you're at it, join our free community at jsparty.fm/community. Thanks once again to our partners, Fassy.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. And thank you to Breakmaster Cylinder for hooking us up with so many amazing beats that we started producing albums and putting them out as Changelog Beats on Spotify, Apple Music, and the rest. That is our show for now, but come back and party with us again next week.